on a Big Mama's part, and I'm in a small little cafe called Cilantro in Soho in London with
Sean Taylor. How you doing?
How you doing, Sean?
Very well.
Feel like a homeless man on the street. Pains in my back and pains in my feet. This place looks familiar. No, I've been here before.
And I have just asked Sean about his wet nose, but he can explain that to you now.
Yeah, it's a strange question for to start with, but for you to start. Sorry. There's a page on my website with characteristics, and it mentions my nose and my painted-on ears, and obviously all completely true.
Yeah, which leads me to my next question. Tell me about your tattoos.
I can't remember what I wrote, to be honest. I'm like, you obviously really studied the page.
I found it really interesting. I found it
interesting. Is it about a voyage?
It was about Ferdinand Magellan. Okay. Or you probably say Magellan, but I say Magellan. Would you like me to remind you?
Yeah.
Seemingly, there was only 20 survivors from their trip. And you have all their names and depictions of them down the back of your arms.
Yeah.
And then you also have menus for survival if you wash up dead on some shore.
Well, I could be wrong, and I'm about to say don't quote me on this, but you probably will. But isn't that part of Moby Dick? Isn't that part of Moby Dick?
I don't know. I've never read Moby Dick, so I can't
tell. I do, obviously. My arms are obviously completely tattooed, as you can see.
Yeah.
And there's menus everywhere. But
Do you have any tattoos?
No, I don't actually, no.
No.
I should do, I'd quite love one. But I don't know, a lot of websites are really kind of boring, and you know, and I thought it'd be kind of interesting to sort of say things that are more kind of, yeah, open to interpretation, and you know,
questions
about the nose.
But you can't remember what you wrote.
I can't remember, but yeah, should have just checked my nose. Yeah.
Which leads me on, it's still on this page in characteristics. Obviously, I stayed there too long. I'm sorry. We will get on to your music. Okay.
God.
If you were Pegasus and you had wings on your ankles, where would you fly off to?
I always think as a time place, I'd go over to 1973, because I think that's the best bit of music ever, and all the best music was ever done in 1973. And everything that I like and everything that I kind of want to be like is from 1973. Like, big hero is John Martin. He did Solid Air and Inside Out in 1973. Another hero is Tom Waits. He did his first album, Closing Time, in 1973.
Great album.
Marvin Gaye did Let's Get On in 1973. James Brown, I think, did 5 albums in 1973, then had a collapse because of exhaustion. Kind of understandable. Loads more that I can't remember, but Temptations did Masterpiece, which was produced by Norman Whitfield in 1973. There's others, but they'll come to me. But there's a whole load of albums that really sort of reflect Dark Side of the Moon, Pink Floyd, 1973, that I think reflect kind of what's possible with music and art, you know. And yeah, I quite like to have been there when they all came out, you know. That'd have been kind of cool. But I'd have never gone out because I'd have just been listening to them all the time, so I'd have probably missed out on things. You know,
yeah. Okay, so can you explain, this is from your website again, I promise we will get on to
We're going to change pages.
We are, we've changed pages. Talk. But we're now on to the irony of dogs. You have a page called Wisdom?
Yep, I'm with you.
Okay.
Is it Unwary Musician?
Say that again?
Is it The Unwary Musician?
I don't know, is it? No, because it just, you have a page on Wisdom and you talk all about God. So
Sudoku.
Kind of, yes.
The dog's been ironed. I think the power of religion is really interesting. I mean, I don't believe in God, but I think the power of religion is interesting as to how stupid humans can be in doing what God tells them to. And I find that both humorous and fascinating for creativity, because you can sort of, the power of, I don't know, art is kind of interesting. And I think because the power of religion is just so bizarre and irrational, that with art I think it can be, the power is genuine, and I think it's something that kind of can take you to somewhere different in a way that religion doesn't. And yeah, I've always had a belief that, and so maybe God is playing Sudoku, I don't know.
Yeah,
you've
got to go to Sean's website to find out more about his views on God. But you also, quite political as well.
Yep.
You do quite a few gigs for Love Music Hate Racism.
Yep.
How did that come about, or did you go looking for that, or did they come looking for you?
No, I've always been kind of involved in kind of left-wing type things. I mean, I've done some work previously outside of music for the Workers' Beer Company, doing bar work, and they're a trade union organisation who do festivals at bars at festivals, and I've always done work for them. And from that, I got some gigs at Glastonbury at the Left Field, which isn't there anymore, the Left Field stage. From that, I got some gigs for Love Music Hate Racism on some universities, and continued to do kind of left-wing type gigs. And that, I think now more than ever, it's important to kind of say that capitalism has failed and we should all rise as one.
Okay.
So after we finish the coffees, obviously. obviously, take it easy first.
Gotta get the coffee down, have a chat, go out, and we'll do something then.
Mm.
So how much does it influence your music, though, your whole political views? And obviously, you spoke a little bit about how religion reflects and
lack
works.
Of it. Mm-hmm.
Or lack
yeah.
of it.
yeah.
So how does the whole political thing influence your music, and how do you involve it?
I think the last CD I did, Angels, was a much more political CD, and that's all about, kind of, was about Bush, Blair, and Paris Hilton. I think very similar actually in the outlook. And then, I don't know, I think it's just interesting how, I don't know, how we all react to the world we live in. I think we're all different, and it's fascinating to see which people react against things and which people either, you know, kind of just ignore, or, you know, by ignoring end up supporting. And I think I find that kind of interesting, fascinating, you know, in the world we live in. And yeah.
Okay. So your current CD that you've just finished is Calcutta
Grove. Yeah.
You call it. Do you refer to your CDs as a complete work? Because you did on your MySpace, and the reason I'm asking you that is kind of like when you're working on a work. Mm. I'm gonna call it. Is there a kind of a storyboard? Is there a connection between all the songs? Do you have an overall picture, or are they random songs?
No, I mean, they're all really thought out. I put things in, pulled things out. I mean, the kind of first song, Calcutta Grove, and the last instrumental, The River Merchant's Wife, the kind of minimalist, almost ballad type quality of those is meant to kind of mirror each other. The album, there's all little stories that kind of fit into each other. There's a song called Nightmares, which drifts into Hold On To Your Love, which are completely different, but I think that's a little story in itself. And then you've got the Revelations, which is a kind of happy, jumpy end of the world, which goes into Buried Alive, which is, you know, the end of the world for a woman who's been beaten up by her partner. And I think all of that is, you know, there's stories within stories, but I think as an overall kind of narrative, if you like, I think it really holds together, and it was really thought about. And you can always change it, I think, whoever you are, and you know yourself, when you're working on something, it can always be better, but it'll always be different, I think, if you're really serious about it. I think it should always be different every time, but you have to let go at some point, I think, you know.
That was kind of my next question, because you do talk about the evolution of your music, and you are right, because when you perform, anytime you do a song, it's very seldom the same twice. Mm. There's always something, no matter how small, that changes. So if you've recorded Calcutta Grove, or even Angels, or Corrugation, the first one, if you come back and say if it evolves so much, would you go back and adapt, or do you believe that you just have to move on and evolve into a different project?
Yeah, definitely. I think it definitely. I mean, I think the first one, Corrugations, I think was very kind of innocent and, you know, kind of sweet at times and even romantic at times. I think the second one, Angels, was just incredibly dark at the end of the world. And then this one is kind of somewhere in between. But I think that the new one is definitely the strongest. I think, you know, the songs, I think, are the strongest. performance is the strongest, and certainly the lyrics for me. I was quite proud of the lyrics. The ones before, I thought, God, I liked them, but you know, I read people that I thought that I wouldn't be like them. So the first time I've really thought, this one, they sound, I like them. They sound alright.
It's nice to come away from it being happy with it.
Yeah.
So what is your writing process with your songs? Mm. Have you got a set process, or can it happen anyhow?
No, I mean it various places. I mean, the one of the weirdest ones I ever did was I did a really strange course, I think, a few years ago, which was I was trying to help myself with music, learn about the music business, and found myself on this completely bizarre business course that taught me absolutely nothing except to do everything that the people, complete opposite of what the people taught me to do. Because you'd Google the people that taught you, and they'd have all these disastrous business schemes that would end with, you know, people, you know, property being set alight, and, you know, straight. Anyway, but I found myself on this course, and they were talking about some business strategy, and I just found myself writing down everything that everyone said. And they must have thought I was really keen. Oh, and I wasn't, but I found myself writing all these things down that were just priceless. And I came up with a song called Tony Blair, because I just thought, yeah, it kind of worked, because it was so mental, you know, what they were talking about. I thought, yeah, I love a bit of that. I like that. So I just, yeah.
So how do you record your stuff?
I mean, it varies. I mean, it's all pretty live, and it's all, I mean, quite often the guitars will be together, the vocals and guitar will be together. Not always. I mean, I find it can work really well on some things and not so well on others. I try and keep it as when I say live sounding, I mean, I try and keep room for improvisation, you know. I think on that song Nightmares, there's about three or four overdubs with a piano. I mean, I was just continually trying to change that, and eventually I found something, and then I brought a friend in to play some trumpet, and that kind of took it somewhere else, and yeah, so that was.
Which brings me to the next thing, it's because you actually play all the instruments on your album,
apart from
the trumpet. So, but, and it's great, but how does that work live then? Mm. I mean, how do you translate the songs to live? Because when I saw you play, you were obviously solo, but do you always play solo? Do you have a band? And how?
Generally, I always play solo, because I think it's, I mean, I don't know, I mean, it's, I think there's something kind of interesting about a musician just walking in on their own, kind of, you know, to play. I mean, I remember I did a gig in Switzerland with the Neville Brothers and George Benson. I remember getting off this little bus that they picked me up in, and I had my guitar in my bag in one hand, and there's all the Neville Brothers getting off with their big fancy coach. I thought, this is quite funny. I was just stumbling along, you know. Who's this guy, though? But I quite like that. I thought it was fun. I just thought it was kind of more interesting than them with their big flashy coach. Though they did have a lot of free drink, which was quite.
Made you happy?
I didn't have any, so it was all on their coach. So, but I couldn't just get on their coach. They only just met me. They'd have been quite angry.
You could have said, I don't have a beer fridge in my car, and I have like some of yours now.
You could maybe do that.
So you use the studio for kind of layering your music and kind of. Yeah, experimenting with it, I guess, and kind of seeing where you can go with it. But live, your music is very raw, I guess, and kind of stripped back, because it's just you.
Yeah, well, I use some effects pedals. I use some delay and some reverb and harmonica. Every so often, if there's a piano there, I might do a song. There's various things with the guitar that you can do to make it interesting. One of them I found recently is sort of singing into the sound hole with delay on, and you can get a kind of really weird kind of effect on the guitar. And there's various things you can do with the guitar, different tunings with the vocals that you can do. And I think that, yeah, I mean, there's something I really like about that. And again, live, I always try and make it different every time, you know, just because I find it the best way to do it, you know.
So which instrument came first?
Guitar, yeah.
And once you learned how to play guitar, did you just go, okay, I'll teach myself piano, or are you self-taught?
No, I had lessons, but I can't read music. I still have music lessons, because I mean, piano is something, I've actually only been playing piano for about 4 years. I've not been playing piano very long. I mean, I'm still having lessons, I mean, continually, because I just want to keep learning, and if I can.
So, is the guitar your instrument out of all the instruments you play? Is that one that you're most comfortable with?
Yeah, at the moment. I think at the moment. But I kind of found myself changing all the time on guitar. I mean, I did a lot in a tuning called Dadgad, which is a tune invented by David Graham, who used it when he went over to Africa to harmonise with a lot of African musicians. And I found myself writing loads of songs in that. And then recently I've been playing lots in F sharp, which is, you know, it's the tuning you bring to a party if you don't want anyone to borrow your guitar, because it's just like, what is going on? Because it's completely like, you know, completely have to guess what, you know, nothing works basically if you play the guitar like standard tuning. And so it's quite, yeah, it's quite handy if you don't want anyone to borrow your guitar, because it is, really is about just guessing, seeing what happens next. And then for slide, when I play slide guitar, I use open D a lot. G sometimes, but not so much. Mostly open D.
Okay. Right. You've also done some music for, you've done some soundtracks for films?
Mm. Yeah, a few independent films, yeah.
And so how does working on your project, like for your CD, compare to doing soundtracks? Because there's obviously a storyboard to films, but do you actually go by that, or do you just...
To be honest, the soundtracks were very much things that basically people listening to my music and wanting to take it and use it. I had no involvement in the films whatsoever. My favourite one that I've had stuff used on was one of the first ones, which was a kind of collage of bits of Shakespeare all filmed around London, and they just used this CD I did. It was actually an earlier one called Johnny Pants, this kind of crazy, weird, all these trippy songs, and they used that as a kind of background to London with Shakespeare, and I really like that because it's really kind of arty and crazy, which is good. I like that.
So, we've mentioned some of your influences. Who would you say is the biggest influence?
John Martin.
And you're now being compared to him. How does that feel?
I'm great. Yeah, I mean,
because I read your reviews that you have on your MySpace for Cut a Grove, and there's quite a few references to you being kind of,
I mean, I think he's just, for me, the best. At his best, I think he's as good a music as I've ever heard. I mean, you can't say it's the best music ever because it's just opinions. But I just what he can do with the guitar and his voice together is just create this whole world of magic. And I mean, I forever go back to John Martin and think, wow, he's so good. And I don't think I actually sound, to be honest, although I use the certain elements of John Martin, I don't think I sound that much like John Martin. I think there's a much more of a blues influence on what I'm doing. He's much more jazz and folk, and I haven't got the beard for folk. Or I hate ale as well. I'm working on the beard. I can't drink ale.
Right, we're kind of coming towards the end of the interview. If you could be a leader of any of, and it can be fictional or real, who would you be and why?
You mean a person?
Person. I get all sorts of answers to this. Some people make it up, so it's like, it doesn't matter.
I've always had a real soft spot for, I don't know what he's like as a person. He could be, actually no, I've heard some bad stories about him as a person, but as a musician, the person I think is really cool is JJ Cale, because I think he's, whatever's gone on in the world musically, he's just really not given a shit. He's just carried on doing whatever he wants, and I think he's really, really cool. I've heard as a person he drinks loads of whiskey and gets into fights and has to be removed, so that's kind of cool too, I suppose, if you're in that guy. But I like the way he's just really not cared. Well, and when he got offered a record deal, we didn't even want one. He just said, well, I'm playing at the pub next Saturday, can't they just come down and watch? And you know, I think they said to him, you know, how about a new album, JJ? And he was like, you know, what's wrong with the last one? He didn't want to, you know, he didn't really care. He just, and Neil Young's another person I think is just completely just his own person. He doesn't give a, if a record company tells him to do something, he'll just do the opposite. And I think that doesn't happen really now.
But you're not with a record company, are you?
Is that
the way you want to keep it, or would you like to be?
No, there's a couple of people who have looked at the new CD and have shown real interest. And I mean, I've just basically said it's there. I like what I've done. I don't want to change it from a music point of view anyway. I think that's thrown him a bit because you normally get that. But I'd have to see. I mean, if it was the right deal and it helped, I'd say yeah. And it'd have to be right. I'm not gonna. I don't think I'd do too well at pop either. Thank God.
That's probably a good thing.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I think that works definitely works in your favour. Okay, I've got one last request.
Mm-hmm.
We're called piratepods.com. And there's this little tradition that happens at the end of every interview.
Yeah.
that we'd like the interviewees to give us their best pirate impression.
I really can't do a pirate impression. I really, do you know what, I was thinking about pirates and I've never really watched pirate movies, so I'm not going to be able to do it.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I'm being really not playing the game, but
that's okay.
I'm not going to compromise, I've said it already. Yeah.
Sean Taylor, he doesn't compromise, and he doesn't do pirates.
I'm really sorry.
Sean Taylor.
I could just do, yeah, a pirate that sounds like me, just, I'm not going to do it. I don't know, pirates are just, you know, because, I mean, there's all kinds of pirates, aren't there?
There are.
There's pirates still, you know.
There are, there's still Somalian pirates on the sea, there's radio pirates, there's lots of pirates. You're just squirming your way out of this, that's
fine. Yeah.
Sean Taylor, thank you very much.
No worries.
And what is this place that you speak in? Why is it worth my time? And should I wear a suit or buy a bottle of wine? He said it's a sad place full of misery and woe. This land of heartbreak, its calcutta grove.